joining me for the latest installment of TV Madness with Nikisha Madden-Toby. I'm your host. What do you think of when you hear old Nickelodeon show titles such as You Can't Do That on Television, Double Dare, The Adventures of Pete and Pete, Wild and Crazy Kids, and Clarissa Explains It All? Well, if you're author Matthew Klickstein, you think book. The author has compiled a fascinating collection of recollections and oral histories from everyone from Mark Summers, who, of course, hosted Double Dare, and Melissa Joan Hart, the actress. She starred in Clarissa. She was Clarissa in Clarissa Explains It All. And so if you get a chance, check out Matthew's book. It's called Slimed, An Oral History of Nickelodeon's Golden Age. Matthew?
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, thanks for doing it. This is going to be fun. Don't worry.
So,
so what made you want to write the book, and how did that all come to be?
Well, those are two very different questions that are also could lead me to be as long-winded as I normally am. But I guess for concision's sakes, I did the book because I grew up on these shows. Mm-hmm. I am a Nick kid, inveterate and proud. And, you know, when you're going to be working on a book for a couple of years and putting a lot of your time and energy and, frankly, money into all the research and everything that goes into it, you want to make sure it's something you're really passionate about. So I thought that this would work for that. The other thing is, you know, there hadn't really been one done yet. Mm-hmm. And with the MTV book having just come out and a lot of nostalgia for 80s, 90s, it seemed like the best time to do it. The way I was actually able to do it was I have a pretty good agent, and I had had a good history of some smaller books in the past and some film work and whatnot, so we were able to get my proposal out there.
Nice.
Luckily enough, it was good enough to get it sold, so we were able to get Slime going, and it's been a tempestuous ride ever since, but here we are.
Yeah, and you had over 250 subjects in the book?
Yeah, no, that was probably one of the most difficult parts of the process.
Yeah.
Many of the Nickelodeon people, both in front of and behind the camera, don't really work in the business anymore.
Oh, wow.
So I had to really put on the detective hat, and I didn't even have a Facebook page at the time I was doing the interviews. So I was just tracking people down all over the place and, you know, south of France, Ireland. There were a lot of people that folks didn't think I'd be able to get, like Roger Price, one of the creators of You Can't Do It on Television, or John Crystal Lucy, the creator of Ren and Stimpy. I was able to get them, and pretty much everybody that I wanted to find, I was able to get involved with the book. And, but that was definitely a very hard part of the process, was finding everybody, scheduling them, doing the interviews, doing it pretty much all myself was almost impossible. But, you know, we got it done.
Good for you. And so talk about Mark Summers. That was awesome that he wrote the intro for the book. And
yeah, you know, my editor is a Nick kid herself. She's
actually
only 26. And when she found out that Mark was even going to be involved at all, she was so excited. And then I told her, hey, not only that, but he actually suggested he would write the foreword before we even asked him. I didn't even dare ask.
Yeah.
You really think of Mark Summers as someone who maybe is going to be this kind of, ivory tower type of guy who's not going to want to talk to anybody or whatnot. He was so easy to talk to. He was so friendly. And when he wrote the foreword, I was just very touched, because not only did he do it on his own, but it was so well written. It really encapsulated everything that Golden Age Nickelodeon was about. He's also become a very close friend of mine. You know, Mark Summers, I just called him the other day just with, advice on something else that was not related to the book at all. I mean, he's almost become a mentor to me, and I know he has been to a lot of other people as well. So he really is truly one of the best, most generous, sweetest people you'll ever meet. So it was great to become friends with him through this process.
And he's a good writer. I really liked what he had to say. And it was funny because, like you said, we grew up watching him as kids, and I love Double Dare. But to read it and sort of have him talk about finding different jobs to, to support his family, his wife and his kids, I was like, oh, right, okay.
it was a little bit of a bone of contention for some people. The book was much, much longer when I originally turned it in, but for word space reasons and for other reasons that are just the nature of the reality of publishing, we had to cut it down significantly. And I decided at a point that I wanted to focus less on just the behind the scenes, the network itself, and mm-hmm. the kind of the cold realities, much of which you can see online already.
Right.
And I really wanted to focus on the people behind the shows. And people like Mark and some of the others. I mean, the book starts right away with what was it like to grow up, on Nickelodeon, and mm-hmm. we go right into Christine Taylor from Hey Dude, talking about, growing up in front of everyone's eyes and millions
right.
of people watching her.
Right.
So I really, and I think there are a lot of people who love the book and saw that that's what I was doing, is it was about the people, the characters. It was almost, I've described it before, like a yearbook for them that, you know, Nick kids and even other people who weren't aware of Nickelodeon could read and say, oh, these are some fascinating, interesting people who have a lot to say about art and diversity and, you know, our pop culture now and media and politics. You know, a lot of things that you wouldn't expect would be coming out of, you know, the first kids network.
Right. Which was started in 1979. I also didn't know that. I mean, your book is just full of really cool facts like that, and just it sort of changes the way you look at Nickelodeon. Because, like you said, we grew up with it, but like looking at it now as sort of this thing that this channel that launched it all, like all this great children's programming and all these careers, it's just really, really cool. So I'm really glad you wrote it.
Yeah, no, I don't know when this is going to air, but a lot of people don't know this, but the official launch date for Nickelodeon was April 1st, 1979.
So
literally this Saturday will be the 35th anniversary of Nickelodeon, April 1st.
April 1st is Tuesday. So.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah. We have even more time, but yeah, no.
Oh, gosh, yeah. My calendar
is all
screwed up.
That's okay. I understand. I also love that in the book that you have a chapter dedicated to green slime. And the whole green slime, which is such a big part of Nickelodeon, if you ever watched the Kids' Choice Awards. And it's so synonymous with the network. But the funny part about it was just sort of like, what's in this stuff? And I love how different people had different theories. It was like, one person's like, oh, it's green gelatin and shampoo and cream of wheat. Another person's like, it's oatmeal and shampoo. And did you ever find out what it really
is? A lot over the years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, the big secret, which is so out now, I don't mind, you know, saying it to people who maybe haven't even gotten the book yet, but, you know, it did start off on You Can't Do It on Television, of course, and was actual, you know, green slime, this gunk that was collected from the commissary and was kept in a bucket after a week.
Oh.
So, you know, it was actually dumped on this poor kid, Tim Douglas. And I hear that the stink alone was enough to make some of the crew members vomit. And that was the first ever sliming. Originally that was going to be more of a through line in the book where I really wanted to kind of follow almost the slime and the way slime changed, where it did start off as gunky, disgusting, real raw, you know, type of stuff. And over the years, it kind of became a little bit cleaner, a little bit more antiseptic, until finally, as we see in the book itself, I believe it's Alan Goodman, you know, toward the end says, you know, the thing that changed about Nickelodeon is the slime's a lot prettier now, it's a lot more art directed, you know, the adults took it and made it a little bit less slimy and fun. And you know, I thought that was a really great metaphor for the way that Nickelodeon changed over the years.
Right, and which is great. It's a great segue to my next question, which is sort of, I love what Alan Goodman had to say, because in your final chapter you talk about sort of like what's next for Nickelodeon, and he just was really matter of fact. You know, he's a television pioneer. He can say this. Who's going to stop him? But he's just basically like, you know, the worst thing that could have happened to Nickelodeon was merchandising and marketing. And can you talk about that a little bit? And did you agree with what he said? I mean, because you're interviewing all these people, and we don't necessarily know how you feel. What did
right.
you think
I
of
mean,
that?
I really, you know, I did, I, you know, that's a whole other, you know, screen on its own. I wanted to stay as objective as possible, and that's why I was really happy to do the oral history format. It allowed people to argue with each other so that there could be a lot of different opinions.
Right.
You know, even that last chapter, although admittedly there's certainly a lot about Nickelodeon, you know, changing for the worse over the years. I allowed people like Herb Scannell and Albie Hecht and some of the other innovators from later Nickelodeon years to say, hey, but we also made it much bigger. We globalized it, things like the Kids' Choice Awards, you know, sliming Tom Cruise. The merchandising, yeah, does take away some of that, you know, raw authenticity, but it also brings a lot more money to the mix so that the shows can get bigger. So, you know, there is that dichotomy that goes on with any kind of creative endeavor like that. Ultimately, I do agree with Alan Goodman and Scott Webb and some of the others who felt that that was sort of the death of the golden age of the network. And in fact, just real quick, I just recently completed a detailed outline for a Nickelodeon film. We've had some interest in the film adaptation. You know, that was one of the through lines that you can really kind of play with, as with punk music or Saturday Night Live or MTV or certainly other subcultures like this. You can really see that once the merchandising comes in, once the money men come in, once the attorneys come in, it takes it from this kind of fun little clubhouse environment and makes it something that's much different. The offices are no longer these play places. Now they're much more sterile and everyone's wearing suits and ties. And that's really kind of the development in the script that I'll be writing for the Nickelodeon film. If that comes to be, because I think that is a really interesting point. And for some people, that's a good thing. For some people, it's a bad thing. But it is something that did happen. So
what do you think? I mean, like, is what is the future? What is, you know, for Nickelodeon? What's next for them coming? Because you know, you've done your research.
Oh gosh, I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I don't have a lot of confidence in where Nickelodeon's going. Mm-hmm. You know, just even in the last few months, I'm sure it's not news to anybody who's paying attention to this kind of thing. But you know, they were having trouble paying their writers. The WGA, the Writers Guild of America, was suing them for that. Mm-hmm. You know, their ratings became lower than Disney Channel for the first time in about 20 years. They're either, you know, firing a lot of people who helped to create the network, or those people are quitting. And every time someone gets fired or quits or something, they end up, you know, becoming a head of something at DreamWorks or Pixar. You know, they immediately get snatched up by another company. I think that says a lot, too, that the network's kind of either pushing away or literally firing these great innovators who get picked up immediately by someone else. So whoever's making those decisions, I think, really needs to kind of consider what they're doing. You know, and I even had a friend recently who pitched a show to them, and not to put too fine a point on it, you know, he made it clear that they're really looking for the same kind of thing that they've been doing over and over and over again for the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. And you sit there and you say, you know, that's not working though. So maybe it's time to try something else. And that's what Nickelodeon did during this heyday, was every show was completely different than the other one. Every show was completely different than what else was on television, the way it looked, the way it sounded, even from each other. And now Nickelodeon is really kind of trying to keep a much more consistent,
corporate.
You know.
Yeah,
exactly. And that does get a little bit dull. You know, one of the things, I'll end my little screen here, but one of the things that I always like to ask people when they're interviewing me about how Nickelodeon's changed over the years is I always say the same thing, which is, you know, well, you tell me what's on Nickelodeon now. And, you know, 99 times out of 100, they can't because, you know, people who are in our age bracket don't watch Nickelodeon anymore. Whereas back in the day, they did. It was for college stoners and older brothers and older sisters and even parents as much mm-hmm. as it was for the kids. Mm-hmm. Now it's really just for the kids, and I think that that's a really big mistake. But you know what? I'm not a TV mogul, so who knows?
I love it, Matthew. Thank you so much. You've been an awesome guest. I would love to talk to you again. I'm sure this will be picked up for a movie. I'm telling you, because you're a really intelligent guy, and I think you have a lot to share. So I'm really glad you wrote the book. And best
Thank
of luck
you.
To
and,
you.
Yeah, and for anybody who's out there, you know, we have a great new website too, slimedthebook.com. I hope
awesome.
People can check it out, and we'll
yes.
keep up information about the possibility of the film. You know, there are things coming together for it. We have some interested parties, so you never know what can happen. But,
nice.
You know, hopefully that comes together. Yeah.
I hope so too. Take care. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So that was our show. Matthew Klickstein, is a brilliant guy. And he wrote Slimed, an oral history of Nickelodeon's golden age. So make sure you check out the book. And also, like he said, check out slimedthebook.com to find out, you know, what's going to happen next for the book and if it'll be turned into a movie. It should be. There's a lot there. So it's fascinating. Make sure you check it out. And we have to thank everybody. Now, this is the part of the show where we thank you. I have to thank Theo. He is so awesome. Theo Mondale is the best sound engineer. You have to love that guy. Our sponsor, Record Surplus in Santa Monica, the last record store. Visit recordsurplusla.com, NPR West, and production assistant and graphic artist Adam Janice. Thanks, Adam, and thank you. Said I'd never make it on my own. Things are looking up for me now. It seems like karma's making its rounds. It's my turn now. You too. You gotta pay for the things you put me through. I hope you do. I-